So good morning too from my side. So my name is Sascha Corti from Microsoft Switzerland. I never know if I do the Geneva sessions in English or French. I'll try to do 1 year in French and 1 year in English. And this is a new topic for me too. I haven't presented this, so I feel a little safer in English. All the French words escaping me. So 1 year again, I'll try it in English, showing you what Internet Explorer 9 can do for you as a developer. So I'm trying not to do a feature demo. I'm telling you why this is the absolutely best browser on the planet, which of course it is. But I'm trying to show you what you as a developer can really benefit from Internet Explorer 9 in your web projects. Let me introduce you to IE9. And at the first point, show you the different browsers side by side. So here you have most of the major browsers, Opera, Safari, Firefox, Chrome, and Internet Explorer. And one thing you see is that in all of these browsers, the browser window itself is really going away. It's going out of the way for the web page. These browsers all have very minimal browser user interface. It's called Browser Chrome, but it sounds like a browser brand, so I'm not using that word. They were very smart in naming Chrome that way. So the user interface is really minimalistic, which I think is a very good thing. And you have one bar to enter URLs or search queries, the smart bar. You have a tool that tells you when you start Internet Explorer 9 how fast was the browser startup and which add-on or plugin was slow or slowing down the browser startup. And then it shows you and says, do you need this plugin? Do you need this Bing or Google toolbar or Ask Jeeves or whatever? And if you're not really using it, it lets you disable it right on the spot to make the startup of this browser really fast. There's a new download manager. So downloads will be displayed in the bottom below your web page, and then you get a window that shows you the downloads that you're doing, and it even analyzes files after download and tells you this is an executable and it's not a very common file. You might want to be cautious in opening this because we don't know what it actually does. If it's a virus, of course, the virus scanner should kick in, should. But it really tries to help you as much as it can. But let's look at the technical side, not at the user features. These were just a couple of things that I'm sure by now you have seen. It has been released for about 3 weeks, so it should be very old for you. And the thing we did in Internet Explorer 9, the main goal, the one goal was same markup. Be compatible with the latest specification on the web, be that HTML5. As here you see borders. Border radiuses in CSS3, but also this is a demo that you can look at on the web, and you will see that all the browsers implement that a little different. So if we do it in Internet Explorer and you have a border radius with dashed style, it will look different than when you do the same, for example, in Chrome. And for a web developer, of course, this is a painful experience because you have to go back and test every page you do in every browser again. You see, there is an optical difference. And the problem now is not that every browser thinks I should do it different because I know how to do it even a little better than the competition. The problem is that many of these specifications are very open. Nowhere in the specification is it written how big the dashes should be in a dashed border, or where exactly a dash should start, or how the dash looks in the rounded corner itself. So, of course, everybody tries to do their best, but it still can result in differences. However, most of the common or standard web content in IE9 should absolutely render the same as in all other browsers, leaving you finally a chance to drop all that. We have to do a special implementation for Internet Explorer because, of course, there it looks different. For web developers, this is a pain, and I understand if they hated the old Internet Explorers, especially version 6 that even we as Microsoft are trying to kill very hard. But I think we might become at peace again with web developers. But of course, if every browser renders everything the same, there is no more need for Internet Explorer. Or any browser is the same, so why even try it? It will only look the same, so why bother installing it if it looks the same as all the other browsers? Which is a good thing, but on the other hand, we need a way to distinguish ourselves. And we do that through a couple of places that do not kill standardization. One is performance. Of course, we live on Windows. We have the advantage that we are Windows and we are the browser. So we really can tickle the graphical performance. First, of course, we fully use the GPU that is available on all computers. On a netbook, on a high-end computer, you have a GPU. One has a little more and one a little less powerful. But there is a lot you can do in the GPU that eases your CPU, so the computer stays free to do other things, while your GPU renders your animations, your JavaScript, executes your JavaScript, real-time and renders fonts. So font rendering can be tricky too. If you scale fonts, TrueType fonts, if you give that to the GPU, you can make your page a lot faster. We looked at web pages, and we saw in their execution that JavaScript execution and rendering were always taking lots of time, very different in various pages, but it was a trend that these two places were something we could tackle. So we implemented a new JavaScript engine we call Chakra, and this engine, like most engines, runs in the foreground on the main thread, on core one, in the foreground UI thread, and it loads your script, it parses it, then it applies compression to the script itself, which speeds it up again through abstract syntax tree, and then it interprets the script and shows you the result of JavaScript. The advantage here is it's very fast for startup, because interpretation can start immediately. But on the other hand, we go at the point where we have generated bytecode, we go into a background compiler and compile native code. But we tried, of course, always doing the background compilation, which is great for long scripts, but which is very bad for very short scripts, because when the background compilation takes longer than the script execution, it has cost you time and not brought you time. That's why the background compilation kicks in parallel on the background thread, while the foreground is already interpreting your script like the old script engines would do. But then we have a special piece of code that checks. Now I have background, I have compiled the script to native code, and then it passes execution from the interpreter to the native code, which will make your script run slow but instantly, and then once it's compiled, speed up a lot as soon as possible. For very short script, this will not even happen. It will just be interpreted. But for long-running or process-intensive script, this will kick in. One thing back. I'm sorry, I was a bit too quick. There are two, in the bottom I have two links for you, two PDC sessions that extensively talk about this to an extent that even I had to listen to it twice to really kind of understand it, but very interesting speeches. If this is of interest to you, I can highly recommend these sessions to you. And there is something new we have invented. It's a JavaScript library, window.ms performance, that allows you to measure very precisely page execution speed or element execution, script execution, element loading speeds inside the page. So you can embed performance monitoring code right into your JavaScript, into your page, which allows you to really closely monitor how fast your page executes. The problem, of course, here is it's Internet Explorer proprietary, so you can only use these in Internet Explorer. Firefox will say, sorry, Windows MS Performance, I have no clue what you mean. But we are trying to standardize them into a window.performance library that should be available and used by all. So it becomes a standard over time when we will, and then we will abandon the proprietary implementation. But we are trying to get this into the standardization, and that's our implementation to show its value. So let's look at a couple of demos that show performance. So here, of course, it's a site, ietestdrive.com, and one is the IE9 fish tank, and it animates fishes using JavaScript, and we can go up to 1,000 fishes, and we're still at 60 frames per second, 1,000 fishes swimming around here, and all done by the GPU. Really, really great acceleration. That's an advantage of our being on our home turf. If I give this to another browser, it will perform quite well too. But if you increase fishes, it will start to slow down because it just has everything in the foreground thread. And this will really... also, if you look at your CPU, you will see that your PC is quite blocked. Not even that bad, but... So here, just a little bit of comparison. And then, of course, this is a speed demo. And speed demos are always good in the lab, but not in the real world. But here, let me get this a little down. Here is a real world example. It's an HTML5 JavaScript only solution that mimics what Flash has been doing, Flash animation. I can toggle to a night mode here. And this, in real time, is performing at very, very nice speeds. I can explore this car in real time. And without a browser plugin, this is pure HTML rendered with JavaScript and the canvas element in real time. So these are real life solutions that really benefit from the speed of IE9. And I think there will be many more of these kind of sites in the future. People thinking not using Flash or Silverlight, but HTML5 based animations. So here, a little long here, take a short demo. So here is the MS, the window.ms performance. This is all done in page. And while rendering the page, the JavaScript measures, for example, the navigation took 58 milliseconds. Then you had the DOM interactive, DOM loading. Here you had the DOM complete after 42 milliseconds, and the whole page was loaded after a little more than 50 milliseconds. So you can be very, very specific and precise in measuring performance right in the browser. And we really hope to standardize this MS Performance library as soon as only possible and open it up to all the browser implementers. Now let's look at the developer tools. IE9 comes with built-in developer tools, and I think the best thing to show these is a demonstration. So if I go again into this IE test drive solution, and I'll open a SVG demo, for example, the SVG helicopter, I see the loaded page. This graphic is done using SVG, and using the F12 key opens the developer tools, and I can now in real time say, hey, I want to inspect an element. I click on this mouse. I click on one of the elements here, distance 0, and I see the SVG tree in real time. And for example, I can start editing in real time here, set this to fill equals red, to debug a web page that I did in real time while it is running. And of course, it will still work with the new parameters. I have to... That's one of those demos. It shows real-time debugging. And the same is for performance monitor. So I go back to my fish tank. And if I want to monitor a page, how it performs, I can go into the profiler and start profiling. And now the page plays the animation. And then after a while, I stop profiling and I get real-time data. Exclusive time, time spent in this function and its, or inclusive time, time spent in this function and its children. So now I saw that draw image took very much, and the swim that I implemented here took the second place. And then the swim, I see, that's of course the animation of the fish. That's good. That's what I expect to be taking much time. And if I go back to my profiler, I'll find the draw down here. And I see that this is the frame per second meter. So I have a meter up here that shows me the frame per second. But actually, that it's always a little different. Sometimes it's much worse. Now it's only in place 7 or so. It's not that much, but I have seen it take much more time. So you can find which code that you wrote is using most time. And things like these, like performance counters, if you measure too often, they can become too process intensive and slow down your solution and not the solution itself. It's quite good to find out where your code is using time and if it's doing what you expect it to do. Another thing that's can be very bad for developers, for example, you go to a site you did. You invented Facebook. Congratulations. I wonder that you're here. And you want to debug that page. And now the problem in debugging here is, let me quickly reopen the developer tools, is that you want to look at your script. You see all the JavaScript libraries here loaded, and then the script is minimized or minified, which means it has been compressed to optimize download time. And debugging this script is more than painful. So we added a function we call format JavaScript, and within only a click and a moment, you have really well-readable and debuggable JavaScript. You can go ahead and add breakpoints as you do in Visual Studio. If you rerun, I'm not sure if I'm hitting this, but if you rerun the page and hit this script, of course I didn't hit it, but it would stop. You could see the values. You could step through the script. It's really, really nice debugging if you did an error in JavaScript. Another interesting thing is profiling. So let's go to Ricardo. Let's start our profiler, network profiler. I capture network traffic in the developer tools. And I search for, what do we look for? Rolex, it's Geneva. They know that I'm in Geneva, so there must be a special deal. Look at the watch. And then we stop our network capturing, and we see exactly for each element how long it took before this was executed, then how long execution took, start, request, and response, and how long until the DOM content loaded and the load event finished here. So for every single element, you see how it was loaded in, or which took very long. So this GIF took quite long to load. And also interesting here is you can ask who initiated this downloading. And then you see that this was done through speculative parsing. So during pre-parsing, it's HTML pre-parsing, the browser said, I think I'm going to be needing this image. I'm not very sure yet. The code hasn't reached downloading this image, but as it's in the code, I think I'm gonna preload it because I'm pretty sure it's gonna be used at a certain point. And then when the code comes to displaying the image, it's already there. It doesn't then only initiate downloading. So as soon as the browser has some capacities, it starts downloading these things. I think it's a very powerful way. And another good thing is you can save these network data Rolex. I'm doing here free commercial. I'm sorry about that. And then I can go into things like Fiddler. It's another very, very powerful, that was the tool I was using before. IE had these things built in to capture real-time network traffic. And then I can even import this session from the IE's HTML format and say this is exact session, and you can use Fiddler now to do different things, more things, or even share your recorded sessions with other people. I think that's a very, very interesting feature as well. That gives you a very good idea how your page loads, how it performs, and where the bottlenecks in your page are. Another one, if you're doing mobile development, you want to see the mobile site of your web page, but of course, the browser is detected and you will not get to the mobile page on many pages. So you can go ahead in the developer tools and you can say, I want to change a user agent string. So I add a custom user agent string, and forgive me for cheating here a little bit, but I use this user agent string, which is the iPhone user agent string. So I say iPhone has this user agent string add, and I set it to the iPhone right away. So now I can set my user agent strings here on the fly, and the page will now render, if I load it, as an iPhone page, which is the mobile version of this page. So I can fake being any other browser on the planet if I like to. Very good for testing mobile solutions that do browser detection to give you the mobile version of itself. So these are a couple. Let me quickly go back to the normal. Otherwise, the rest of the demos will be a little weird if we do all in an IE style browser. The demos will turn up to be a little weird. So, one word about this, the future again, or browser detection. Of course, it was, especially in times of IE6, it was very important to have browser detection and say, if IE6 is coming along or Internet Explorer, we will have to show them a different page than we do on the Firefox or Chrome or Opera standards based browsers. You should try to avoid browser detection in favoring feature detection. Feature detection goes, if you're in a well-known browser configuration and you know, okay, I have Internet Explorer. In browser detection, you do the detection once, and then every element is loaded based on what you programmed for Internet Explorer. In feature detection, you detect every single feature. Can this browser do Canvas? If it can, you show the Canvas. If it can't, you have to fall back. Can it do HTML5 video? If it can, you show this. If you can't, you show maybe Flash or Silverlight. It is more coding than browser detection. It's more work, but it helps you with unknown or changing browsers. So if Microsoft upgrades Internet Explorer to version 10 and you had browser detection for Internet Explorer, it will always say, yeah, it's Internet Explorer. But then your page renders something that maybe IE10 will not be able to render, or IE9 and 8 have this problem. So if you used one of our old tricks to render something, the old tricks may not work. And even if you had the working code in your page, you see this on the left side, your path will never go there. Whereas with feature detection, you will see that this browser can do A, but it cannot do B. And then you will show feature A, but you will substitute feature B. And this future-proofs your website, and if an unknown browser comes along, feature detection will work perfectly with an unknown browser. As for each feature, it says, oh, this browser can do it, so I'll show it. And this browser can't, so I'll fall back to another rendering. And if you have to do browser detection, always use a specific version number. Never go for, if it's IE, show this. Say if it's IE less than 7, or IE 6, or IE less than 8, or less than 8, and equal 8. Then you know that future versions will not be checked, and future versions will not get the substitute. And if you do feature detection, always check for the standards, because many browsers can also do the fallback. So if you want to do Canvas, always test the standard first and then only then test for a fallback, because most browsers will also say, yeah, I can also do the fallback, so they will never show the Canvas even if they could have shown it or could it would have worked. So with browser detection, use the less than equal 7 as you see on the right. If you have to use it, don't use a generic. Now it's Internet Explorer. Now I will show the fallback because versions may change. And in feature detection, it's actually not that complicated, because the easiest way to implement it is to go and simply instantiate the feature. Do we have a canvas? Just try to instantiate one. Return doc.create element canvas. And if that gives a, throws an error, you know, this browser can't do a canvas, and then you fall back. If it throws no error, you just display your normal canvas. And you add that for the elements that are in question. There's not so many elements. A page may have 3, 4, or 5 that you're unsure if a browser can render them. It's not every single element that would kill you. And there is a library. I'll talk more about this in detail in my HTML5 session in 2 hours. Modernizer, if you load this JavaScript library, all these feature detections are there for you, and you can simply ask the library, can this browser do this? And it will even automatically give you the fallback if the browser cannot do it. It's quite a powerful library. So the other thing, it's also working in markup. So you see on the left is an video HTML5 element, and it shows a video, but if this browser cannot do HTML5, it will show the text download video, because it will just skip. It will try to execute the first line it can, and only then if it cannot skip to the next. So you can add fallbacks into markup right away. And the browser that can display it will never show the text download video. On the right side, you see the same in CSS. It will try to render border radius, and if it can't, it will try the web, the Mods border radius, which is the Mozilla proprietary implementation, the older one, or the older fallback for WebKit Safari. And those will only be executed if the previous one couldn't execute. So the same paradigm works in HTML, in JavaScript, and of course in CSS. There was a website. I did this demo like 3 weeks, 2 weeks ago, and it worked. And now a live demo, and now they fixed it, and it's not breaking anymore. So I was very smart and copied their website to show you the problem. So here I have a very nice JavaScript library that shows functions as graphs done by a Danish university. And it's just not showing in Internet Explorer. And then if you go here and you say, hey, let's quickly debug this, and script start the debugger, and it will show you that this variable is just not there. It cannot talk to it. And then you see that they do a generic browser test if browser is MSIE, and then they do an XCanvas hack, which is just not supported in IE9 anymore. And it's a good solution to make this page run in IE7 or 8, but for IE9, it's a problem. And then if you go here and say, hey, IE, why don't you... I have to quickly stop debugging here. IE, why don't you quickly render as Firefox? Tell the site you are Firefox, you reload, and it works perfectly. Even if you start debugging, you will see that it doesn't stop. There's no error. It doesn't even go to that fallback function. So that's a problem with browser detection. But I have to say, the guys were quick in fixing this demo, and they removed the generic browser detection saying if IE. Let's quickly look at the if IE, they removed that part, and now if you look at their site, it works perfectly in IE9 too, because they really detect if IE less than version 8, only then do they do the fallback. So So they fixed that. Gorgeous. It was great for my demo, but they were so fast in fixing this. Now it works again. So that's a very good example on how to use feature detection or very specific browser detection instead of generic browser detection. If a page that you wrote is just not rendering in the current version of IE at the moment, you can add this XUA compatible string to your web page and tell it's a meta tag that is ignored by all other browsers. It's very standards compliant. It will not break your page in any other browser, but it will allow you to tell IE, please, 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 render this as with the IE 7 or 8 or even earlier engines because it just breaks in the newest version. I know I'm fixing it, but for now, please just fall back to the compatibility view. You can add this to web config, to the on a per site basis in the HTTP header, or on a page with a meta tag, in a single page with a meta tag. So for just to fix your site or give you some time, you can force IE into compatibility mode and make all other browsers ignore it and say, this is a meta tag I'm not interested in, and they just render it normally. So another thing where we try to differentiate from the other browsers is a feature we have added to IE9 that allows you as a web page or web developer to integrate it very, very nicely in Windows 7 in the taskbar and in the start menu or in the Vista start menu. But mostly the most benefit you will see in Windows 7 and IE9, you can create an experience for people that use your website a lot that they can add it to the taskbar and have menus on the icon of the taskbar right away, even if the page is not running, as they have for installed applications like Outlook or Messenger or something. And the pin site feature also lets you customize the look of the browser. So you see the Blick page here has red buttons and the logo displayed on top that will always be there. Even if the user navigates away from Blick, it will stay in the Blick look and feel, so you can brand the browser. It's like a branded browser that does not require any installation of the user. There used to be an Internet Explorer administration kit, or there still is for enterprises, but you could customize IE 7 or 8 to have this look and feel, but people would have to install it. This new feature can be activated without the user doing or installing anything, by just dragging the icon or the favicon or the URL into the taskbar, pinning the icon to the start menu. And in the bottom part, you see the menu that opens when you right-click on the icon in the Windows 7 taskbar that shows you a list of things that are most used on your web page. And for a web page that people really visit often, this can be a real advantage because they don't have to go to the start or front page every single time. They can go to a sub page right away from the start, from the taskbar, when they want to open the page. Let's quickly look at how you do this. So first, what you need is a high-resolution icon, a favicon, that has various resolutions. The optimal is all four possible resolutions that you see here, 16, 24, 32, and 64 pixels square. And Windows, I never was very happy with the icon editors offered in Windows. So luckily, there is now an online icon editor that allows you to create these icons from any image source. Of course, you can draw icons, but you know, it's probably not the tools, perfect tools for artists. What I do is I Photoshop them or get them from any other pictures from some graphic designer, and then I go into. Let me quickly blow this up so it's better visible. So I have a Tech Days image, one with the logo font and one without. So I'll import this one, and I'll tell this tool to use this for very large and a little smaller, 32, but not for 24 or 16, because there the font is just ugly. But for these, I'll upload a different one, the one without the small without the Tech Days word up here. I'll just add them to the 24 and 16. Now you see my icons. Okay, this is already almost unreadable, but I leave it for now, but this is already readable. So now I can preview my favicon. You see how it would look in IE. It's pretty nice. And it's a favicon that is compatible, of course, with all browsers. So that's not a proprietary thing. And now I'll export, and it's being downloaded. You see the download manager down here, and saved to my favorites folder. And now I copy it into my project solution, and I'll be adding more features now. So this is the first thing we need, or we want. And now we want to add items to that taskbar. So now if I go to my page, I have prepared a page in WebMatrix, a demo site. And if I look at the default HTML and I'll run this, it's a Tech Days portal. I have no favicon added yet. I can drag this down here to the taskbar, but you'll see the standard icon and no right-click special features. So I'll be unpinning and closing this again. And now I'll be adding a little bit of markup, meta tags, to add these menus. I'll be cheating here a little bit for sake of time. HTML is always very wordy, so I could be typing here for hours. And I want to spare you that. So the first thing is our favicon, the one that we just designed. We load that. And then I give it a name, application name, and then a tooltip. So that's the hover menu, what the hover mouse over menu will say. And then I add tasks. And each task has a name, a URL that can be on or off-site, even in a different domain, and an icon. It can be a favicon or a different icon. If you did that, you can already try your page. It should now, see, sometimes, of course, now it's cached. I have to reload the page. Now you see the favicon here. I drag it down. Now I have the favicon in the taskbar. I close the window. First, it stays here. It gets a menu to all the interesting sub-sites. And if I open it, you see the branding, the colors, and the icon automatically added. And even if I... So Internet Explorer 9 has its own task here. I can go to Google. I can go to Bing. And these will look standard, nice, pretty. But your site does not run under this main icon. It runs in its own process, in its own browser, in its own icon. And even if you navigate away to, let's say, SBB, it will retain your look. So you have branded this browser for this user with your site. Close this one. And as you can also see the nav button color, I haven't mentioned that, but it will by default take the predominant color in your favicon, but you can set the color by hand. So if you want it to be a different color behind the back and forward buttons, those big buttons on top, you can set it manually with the application navbar color meta tag. The next thing is, the problem here is people probably won't find out or know that they can pin this site to their start menu and that it will really add some interesting features for them. So it is a good practice to add a little bit of script if you really want to promote this feature, to tell users that this feature is available, but only if they are on IE9 and only if they haven't already pinned the site. Because if they already pinned it and you show them again, it's kind of like, yeah, I know, I've already done that. Please leave me alone. So we'll add a little bit of script that our init app function. And the script basically checks if MSIE9 is available. And if true, it tries to find out if we are already in MS IE site mode. And if not, if yes, we just skip. And if not, so it means if we are IE9 and if we're not yet in site mode, we will now locate a special div. You will find this on the main page. It's just an empty div. Where are you? Body. It's this pin me. It's just completely empty. And then we will load an image and set its width and height and add an on-click event button and append. So we will just then show this image. So now, if I save this and run our page again, it will, I'm pinned, it will not show up. Let's unpin and load again. Cache, run. Be nice. Now it shows up. Drag me to the taskbar or click to install me. And now the user knows, I can use this and drag it down, of course, to pin. And once it's pinned, this will go away. And also, and that's quite good about Web Matrix, if you have installed multiple browsers, you can test it right in a different browser. So let's quickly do it in Firefox. Connecting to my own machine. This can sometimes... this might be configured to use a proxy, which is not there. I'm sorry about that. Let's try in Chrome. Not Firefox fault, my fault. But Chrome, you see, it will just not show up because it wouldn't make sense in here. But that's exactly the feature you want. So it shows up only, advertises this feature only if it's not pinned already. To really show users that this feature is available. Customizing jump lists. So the jump lists are quite static. They're downloaded the first time you pin, but then they stay static. And for a running page, you may want to add dynamic icons to this jump list. For example, if you do an online email solution in the web browser, it would be cool if this could show you a little icon saying you have 4 new mails and two new reminders, and they only showed up while the email client was open for like half an hour, and suddenly they appear, and if you read the mail they can also disappear again. And this can be done using script. These are, of course, now very Microsoft proprietary, so you have to pay attention not to execute them in other browsers. But these scripts allow you to add dynamic elements to your jump lists. Even categories can be added, and elements can be added to these categories or completely removed again. So we'll add this. See, it's quite wordy, so I'm not hand typing all this code. It's just I'm a very bad typer. I always mistype, and debugging JavaScript still is a little time-consuming and painful, so I don't want you to have to fix my code here just to try to show you a demo. So what this does is it searches for all the element content list, and then it checks gets the hyperlinks and the headings, and for each of them it creates a new jump list item with the name of its title and its hyperlink as a click action. So if you run this, you see that the normal jump list is standard. But as soon as I open the page, the script should change. Let's see if this works. Of course I have to instantiate it. I have to tell, see, me and coding. It's always an adventure if I have to write live code. So if we are in IE9 and we are in site mode, now we can use this part of the browser. We have to, of course, say that window on focus equals add local jump list. So we have to add this jump list, of course, once we load the page. So now For every article on the site, three articles here, HTML5, another, and benefits, you see items here, HTML5, another, and benefits. And if I change the page here to videos, you'll see three different links. Internet Explorer, Internet Explorer. Very selfish, always talking about Internet Explorer 9 here. So these will now adapt dynamically, even if the user or use your script, if you have a script that executes while the page is waiting in the background, you can still change these dynamically. So that's dynamic elements in your jump lists. And overlays, of course, if you dynamically add items while the page is running, you also want to show the user in the taskbar that something happened. Facebook does this very well. They add a red star if something happened, a notification for you arrived while the page was open. But important, this only works when the page is open. So if it's not open, there will not be any notifications. On the other hand, if it's open and sitting in the background, you can notify the user visually by adding, also through script, an icon, an overlay. So it's another icon with lots of transparency so that your original icon will still show through. And you can add multiple of these on top of each other or clear them again. So let's see if I'm still mastering this. So my notify icon function here is just a very little code I need in here. My notify icon, but prone to typing errors. So, and I already have an event handler, I think, in place that when I click a certain element on the page, it will just generate an alert. So I'm not doing some background checking for updates in this demo, but I'm simply, I'm not executing a JavaScript right away, sorry. So here is my page running, and here is our icon. And now if I click this text, you will see a little star here appearing over our icon down here. And this star, it's not very visible, you probably make this a little more bigger or more attractive, but this can be shown while the page is running, even in the background, to tell the user, hey, something has happened, new mail has arrived, or new message is here, or notification for you. You can show this, and it will, of course, stay now because nobody clears it. So I should add another initialization here that tells me to, when the page loads, it should also window.external.mssitemode clear icon overlay. I hope I wrote this one right. So now the first thing the page does on loading should be to clear the overlay. Yeah, let's quickly reload the whole, not implemented. Reload our page. Now we have no notification. I generate the notification icon. I navigate to a different page and the notification fades away. So it's up to you to add or remove those notification overlays. It will just stay there if you don't change it, even if the user changes pages, which can be quite useful too. So still with a little script and only a few meta tags, we have been able to really nicely integrate the page in Windows. But there's one more thing we can do, and you may have seen that certain Windows applications, if you show the preview by hovering the mouse over your icon of your application, it can add buttons to these. So the Messenger has these for your presence, or the media player has play, pause buttons. You can add these to your web page as well, again, using scripts. So I have a section on my page that is videos. And if I look at one of these videos, we want to add to this preview window, add buttons here for play and pause.
My name is Anderson Kwok.
Okay, that's working. So let's go here. And that's the worst in code. I'll just explain these to you. We need to add these buttons, and what we do is we check if there is a video element on the page, and we only show the buttons if that element really is present. So we check for a video, and if there is one, we add the play icon, we get an image, it's an icon again, and a name, a function, and we add the event listener MS thumbnail click. And then here, what we do is we play or pause the video. So that's the minimal implementation here. And now if I reload the page, the preview should have, let's try it again, videos. Be nice to me. The video should have but doesn't. Let's see what, have a guess. Of course I have to call this function. And I'm great at writing the functions, but somebody should call them too. So here what I need to do is to add these buttons just by simply say add buttons. Here we go. So now on every single page, so even on a page that doesn't have videos, the function will just exit. I shouldn't show a button here now. Is there a video on here? Or we don't even do a check here. So let's see if it works. So here is our play button.
My name is Anderson Kwok.
I can play or pause right from this page. But I always see, let's make it a bit better visible. I always see the play button. It's not showing up as a pause button. And the problem also is if I navigate away, the button will not go away. So if we want to fix this, we have to change the function slightly. And you see it's kind of gets, this is a little fat in code, but it's not that difficult. It's just a little bit, a few lines of code here. So here, first what we are using is we are instantiating styles. And styles have different icons and different names, and we apply these styles then later in the play and pause click. If it's playing, we add the pause style, and if it's paused, we add the play style, so people know the button is toggling. And there is also a function for hiding the buttons again if they're not used anymore, because people navigated to a page that doesn't contain a video. And apart from that, the logic stays the same. We just added these styles now. And now, if I reload, go to my videos, again, I should see the play button.
My name is Anderson Kwok. I'm a programmer.
Yeah. See if I have to saved and rerun. It's always caching is great if you browse the web, but if you develop, caching can be a little bit pesky. So, of course, I need to start it from my thumbnail here. I don't need, but that's where I expect it right now. So now we should be there. It's a play button.
My name is Anderson.
Changes
Kwok.
Into a pause button. Can play again. Can pause. And if I navigate away here now to, let's say, our blocks, the button should have disappeared again. So there's no button on this page unless there is a real video to show. So it's a little bit wordy, the script. It's a few lines here, but not too difficult. Just a couple of checks, instantiating two styles, and then toggling play and pause. You can add up to 5 buttons at the same time. If you add more than 5, the first you added will be pushed away to the right, so they come in from the left. And you can manage each button individually, add it, remove it, change it, and of course react to its events. The event will be only sent to the page it originated on. So this feature, recently we had a question, can this be used to inject malicious code into a page by getting you to a bad page, adding such a button, and then the user navigates to a nice page, and if he clicks the button, is there a script executed? No, there's only an event fired that the page wouldn't probably even handle in that new domain, and we make sure that the event is not even triggered if it is not on the same domain or page that was where it originated. So the feature is quite secure. It will only stay on the page where it was developed. So here are a few resources for you that I collected on IE9 development. I will go into HTML5 in my next session. And this was really about why should you as a developer care for Internet Explorer, and why do I believe that we now finally have a browser that web developers will not hate. And now the only open question is, how can we get rid of IE6? As you know, that IE9 will not run on XP, due to just XP cannot do what we need for this browser. So we're really hoping to get people up to Windows 7 and to IE9 if possible, and away from the problem we call IE6. Yeah, is there any pressing questions, or do you want to take the question part? We have 3 minutes.
Oui, on ne voit pas très bien. Donc, est-ce qu'il y a des questions de l'audience pour Sacha? Oui, vous en priez. Attendez, je vous amène le micro.
Run for us.
Thank you. Although IE6 isn't perfect, one of the things we did like about it is the fact that it seemingly integrates seamlessly with the Adobe product set, specifically with PDF generation, whereas we're not finding that to be the case for IE9. Are you remedying this, or is this part of the Microsoft not Adobe strategy?
Actually, we try to be real good friends with Adobe and supporting them as well as we can. I would suggest it probably is an incompatibility. Is it based on a plugin that Adobe adds to IE6? Or is it a PDF rendering inside the browser window?
It's a combination of things like Adobe Reader and also third-party plugins.
Yeah.
And also hand-generated code in C#.
Okay. Ooh. I don't see why it shouldn't work, because the Active Access, we still support them. Also, I wouldn't tell people to now start investing in ActiveX development. It should actually run. So we did not do anything that should break compatibility with old ActiveX plugins in IE9. But, you know, things happen. Should look into that, what it is in detail. But I do not know of any sinister plans of Microsoft trying to make us incompatible with Adobe. No, no.
Super, thank you.
You're welcome.
Y a-t-il d'autres questions? Oui.
It's just a simple question. You tell us that we should use feature-based testing, and you used is IA9, so when IA10 will go out, our code won't work for the special feature on the dock.
That's right. This I coded by really checking for IE9, and if IE10 comes, it wouldn't work. But I am not sure. I hope that this feature will be there in IE10, but if it's there, my code will break. That was a bad practice. But you could also check the MS. You saw me using all these MS pin site methods. You could also check by trying to instantiate one of these in a try-catch block. And if there is an exception, then you won't show. And if it works, if you can instantiate, it will. The problem is, in the beta of IE9, where I coded this demo, even if the feature worked, it will always also throw an exception. That was, as you saw me, I worked from start with a try-catch block. And now in the release, I could change this code, but the the catch, even though everything worked perfectly, it would always throw an error. And if you do feature detection, that's the way you go. If an error is thrown, then you do something else. And we did throw an error in the beta, but this was only a beta problem. So this code, I had to work around that by doing the hard-coded browser detection. But you are right, the nice way would really be to check, try to instantiate one of those MS site mode scripts, and if that is understood, you can assume that this browser understands the pinning feature. You're right. My code would break in IE10. But you know, maybe that's to keep my future work safe, but it's guaranteed my future job. No, but you are absolutely right. That's not the way to do it. Okay?
I was wondering, the developer tools that you showed, are they a plugin for IE9, or are they part of Visual Studio, or what is the deal with those?
They are part of IE9. As soon as you install IE9, on every computer, they are there. They are a fixed part of IE9, not even a plugin, and not Visual Studio. They're really, as soon as you install IE9 and press F12, you get these tools. It's a fixed part of the browser. It may be a little overload for a normal user that never uses them, but they're always there, these tools. Yeah, everything except for Web Matrix, the editor that you're seeing here, it's a special download, an HTML editor. We have now a new one, or ASP.NET web content editor. But everything else you saw was really fixed part of IE9.
Sacha, merci beaucoup. Merci pour cette présentation.
Thank you very much.
On va...